What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gif. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey everyone, real quick before today's episode starts, I just want to do some housekeeping here. So if you do not already, please follow me on the social medias, Twitter and Instagram, with the handle at RealChrisPlatte. That's C-H-R-I-S-P-L-A-T-T-E. And stay tuned there because I got a lot of stuff coming as far as announcements for the YouTube channel as well as the podcast itself as we approach the NBA season. So without further ado, let's jump to today's episode, a Central Division preview with my favorite Pistons writer, James Edwards III of The Athletic. This was an awesome podcast, and I'm excited for you guys to listen. So enjoy. All right, hello everyone, and welcome back to a very special episode of Strictly Hoop Talk. As always, I'm your host, Chris Platte, and as we finish these division previews, I got my man, one of my favorites, my absolute favorite Pistons writer, James Edwards of The Athletic, joining me via his car. James, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. Man, I appreciate that. Those are kind words. Thank you for having me on, and I'm not mistaken. Do you do stuff with Dead End Hip Hop too? I think I saw that in your bio before.
Yes, I do, and I wanted to also point out to you before we got on air, but I didn't. So I think I could bring it up now. I see that little what do you call it? The wallpaper on Twitter, not your profile picture, but the one behind it. You got some records. So is that your collection, or is that just a picture of some of your favorite albums, or what is that?
Oh no, that's my collection. It's a little, that was taken a few years ago. It's a little bit bigger now. I think I have somewhere like 600-700 records, and damn, more than 50% are like hip hop LPs. But yeah, no, I've been on Dead End Hip Hop since, man, like early, like when they would go to like random places in Atlanta. Like I go all the way back to like I think 2012 or something like that was their first year, 14. Mm-hmm. I've been watching it since then, so that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, myself as well. The one who put me, the way I found them was through one of my favorites, arguably my favorite artist ever, John Connor from Flint, Michigan.
Yeah, that's where I'm from.
And that's awesome, man. John Connor is one of my absolute favorites. He's a superhero of mine. So I found them reviewing his mixtape. I think it was season 2 at the time, or one of his early mixtapes. And yeah, I was blown away by Dead End Hip Hop, and I've been following them ever since. And then, you know, I joined them in a fantasy basketball league, and then next thing you know, I'm telling them to check out my podcast, and now we're here, and I'm working with Dead End. And I went to Atlanta in the summer to record at their studio, and it was a good time.
Dude, that's crazy. Yeah, I talk to BZ every now and then on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, he's really dope.
He's obviously a Detroit guy. And, yeah, that John Connor mixtape they did, I think it might have been like his State of Mind album or something. I forget. Unconscious State of Mind.
Oh yeah, Unconscious State. Yeah,
one of my best friends is a producer and has two beats on that album actually.
Oh man, bro, listen, we gotta talk about that. We gotta get to the basketball because I'm not trying to hold you up.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But we gotta get to
John
that another time.
A few weeks ago, they're making some new stuff now, so I'm sure, oh, man, you as a fan, you'll hear something soon.
Oh, man. I could talk about John Connor all day, but let's get to some basketball. Let's preview the Central Division. Now, in this podcast, the way we do it is we go from the record worst to first based on last year's records. We have one question of what we're looking forward to with each team, one question or challenge that each team faces, and then we take a look at their current Vegas over-unders, and we make a prediction. So if we're starting at the bottom, we're starting with the Cleveland Cavaliers. James, what is the most important thing for Cleveland going forward this year?
A big thing, obviously, I established an identity. I know it's super cliche, but new coach, bunch of young guys. They were in Detroit, was it earlier this week, last week? I'm already mixing stuff up.
It was a couple weeks ago, I think, at Michigan State, right?
Well, no, the Cavaliers and the Pistons.
Oh, yeah, the preseason.
On the preseason. Yep. So I saw them either Monday or last week. I can't remember. But I think they have the ability to play hard, play scrappy. They're not going to win many games, but with Colin Sexton, I think Garland can get after it. I'm not the biggest Jordan Clarkson fan, but he plays hard. I think he's going to be second, or he's going to be up there in shot attempts, Jordan Clarkson. They just need to establish an identity, kind of figure out who they are, get some of the young guys going. They're not going to win a lot of games, like I said, but I think they can be annoying for some teams on some nights.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think to point out something positive on what will most likely be a very tough season for them. Last season, I thought they made some nice moves with the trades of George Hill, trying to move the J.R. Smith contract. Like, I think they handled things the right way. They kind of used their high salaries in order to return some picks and get some prospects. And now they have Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. And that is where I'm at, because they've both had high usage in the preseason. And I'm not sure how that pairing works, James. Do you see that pairing working, or do you see them having to be split up and play with Jordan Clarkson?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not really sure. They're both very small. Like, Garland's even smaller in person than I thought, and I knew he was small. Sexton's small. I think they're going to have issues at times, and I think Garland's kind of the guy. Beeline's going to eventually kind of put the ball in his hands more. I don't know what they do with Sexton. I might be wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they try to make a Garland show and move on from Sexton at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I like him. I think he's going to be an okay player. I like Kevin Porter Jr. if he can kind of get his mind right and stick the course in the NBA and have good mentors and influences around him. I think he'll be okay. I like his game. Yeah, but I don't see the Sexton-Garland pairing work because they both are very, very small. But I think one of them, specifically Garland, has the potential to be really good.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that Garland has a very high upside, but I'm not either sold on the pairing of Sexton and Garland. I don't think they're ready to move on from Sexton, but I think that will be a reality that will become that will happen quicker if Darius Garland plays well, and I think that'll be an easier reality for them to embrace. But for now, they're going to definitely try to play them together and see how they go. They're over under. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and I don't really see, and I haven't watched enough, obviously, Cleveland in the preseason. I don't see either one as kind of an off-ball guy.
Yeah.
I think both are at their best with the ball in their hand, and at a point they're going to have to make a decision with that. But, yeah, I'm with you. I don't see it working out in the long term.
Yeah. So their over-under is at 24.5. Last season they got 19 wins. So that's a six-game improvement if you're taking the over. I hate to bet unders on the lowest over-unders, just because at the end of the day, these NBA teams have NBA talent, and they find ways to win games, whether it be through taking advantage of scheduling of tough scheduling for a team, or, you know, home games and all that. But I don't see a 5-win improvement on this roster, a 6-win improvement. So I'll take the under, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to take the under. I don't know if games are tight, who they go to. I know Kevin Love is still there, but can we expect Kevin Love to play a whole season?
Yeah.
And then the young guys, are they ready to kind of – is it going to take them a while for someone to kind of emerge as a late-game go-to guy? Do you right now, I mean, I think Jordan Clarkson's probably the guy. If you need a bucket at the end of the game, he's going to be on the floor. And I'm not sure that's going to win you basketball games. But, no, I'm going to take the under by a hair. Maybe they get to 22, 23. But, yeah, I don't expect them to win over 24 games.
I don't either. Now, let's move on to the Chicago Bulls. This is a team that's making a lot of headlines because John Hollinger had the Bulls over the Pistons. And the Bulls have kind of been this under the radar. A lot of basketball analysts are you know, trying to pick this and Atlanta as sneaky playoff teams or as sneaky good teams, just because they have exciting young cores. But I got to be honest with you, James. I mean, my thing coming into season is I don't see this team being any better than Atlanta, and I don't see this team making an incredible jump. I like the front court of Porter, Markkanen, and Wendell Carter, and Zach LaVine we know is a good offensive player. He said he's working on his defense, but that's something that, you know, he's going to have to prove in games. So I'm not really too I don't see this big jump that some people are projecting. Do you?
You know what? It's a tough because I see what, like you said, they're kind of the sexy pick from basketball nerds like ourselves. And I see why. I'm a huge Markkanen fan. Like, I think there's going to be a point where he has a breakout season, and it could be as soon as this year. Wendell Carter impressed me last year. I like Otto Porter. If the guys around him can emerge and kind of fill the roles as go-to guys, I don't think Porter is he shouldn't be your one or two option, and I don't think he's going to be in Chicago. I thought he was pretty solid when he first got there last year. I like LaVine. I like everything I've heard about coming from LaVine this offseason. But like you said, you got to show me that you're going to play defensively. The shot has to continue to improve. I like the team. I don't love their bench. They'll get Denzel Valentine back, but I'm not sure if that's a game changer off the bench. A lot of things would have to go right. They'd have to be relatively healthy for most of the year. LaVine would have to continue to develop defensively, obviously, as we talked about. His shooting would have to improve, and Markkanen would really need to take that next step. I don't think they make the playoffs this year. I think they're a year away. But again, I wouldn't be surprised, because there are some uncertainties with teams like the Pacers and Detroit, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I tend to try my best to not get excited about the young and up and coming teams, because those teams are typically, they let us down more than they impress us. You know, teams like Minnesota in the past. So with that being said, I like their offseason. I thought they did have a good offseason. You know, they kept the core intact. I like the pickup of Satoransky. Again, he's another guy.
Yeah, I meant to mention him. I like Satoransky. I like how you have another guy different from LaVine that you can use in the pick and roll. I'm a big Satoransky guy.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It'll be interesting that they finally have what I think is a good point guard, because Chris Dunn, I was never too sold on him. He was a little too shaky for my liking. Satoransky seems to be someone who's solid. So I do see a jump in this team as far as wins go. They got only 22 wins last year. I definitely see a jump, but do I see, you know, this 15, 16, 17 game jump that it would take to make the playoffs? I just don't think so, because right now their line is at 34.5, and that's about what I have them at. I think they do have, you know, 10 to 13 win improvement on the horizon for them, but I can't see. I'd be honest with you, if they got more than 36 wins, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, that's where I'm about. So I'm going to take the over. I could see them getting 36 wins. Maybe 37, 38, but I think they're right in that high 30s, mid to high 30s. Again, if relatively healthy, I do think they get the over.
Yeah.
But not by much, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's jump to the team you cover and my hometown team, the Detroit Pistons. So Pistons, I thought, had a really solid offseason. They upgraded their roster on the wings with guys like Rose and Snell, and Luke could also, you know, someone that everybody's kind of really expecting to take a step forward, while also kind of compiling some of these assets, you know, of course, the draft picks and, you know, and Seve, who they got at the deadline last year. So I thought they had a pretty solid last season, or off season, I should say. But the question I have with this team is that you talked about this a lot. You talked about the Pistons. I've read a couple of your articles on The Athletic talking about, you know, that last roster spot, and what you're hearing is that they want to keep Johnson and Wood. So to do that, they'd have to trade somebody like a Kyrie Thomas. And do you think, is your gut opinion right now that they do make a trade or that they don't make a trade and they cut one of Joe or Wood?
Yeah, man, I've never seen so much hoopla over one of the last roster spots. Like, people in Detroit right. are acting like it's going to change their fortunes. Christian Wood has been very impressive. Mm-hmm. He's been very good during the preseason, but again, he's just a backup center. He's played as well as you would expect a backup center to play. It's not like it's game-changing. Mm-hmm. Joe Johnson has not been good on the court, but I'm one of those guys that find value in locker room guys. Like,
absolutely.
I think that's super important in the NBA when you're together all the time, when you have a bunch of young guys, especially on that perimeter positions, on those swingman positions, they got a lot of young guys there, and Joe's been through it all. Joe knows his place in the NBA now. He's happy to just be back. And I think he has some words of encouragement that could help these young guys. My gut tells me they do make a trade. I mean, Kyrie Thomas, Svi Mihailuk, and Bruce Brown were their 2008 second round, not picks. They got Bruce Brown. They drafted him, traded up, so traded to get Kyrie Thomas from Philly, and mm-hmm. then at the deadline traded for Mihailuk. But those guys are from the same class, and at a point, the front office was going to have to make a decision on one of those three, I thought. I would have been very surprised if all three who play kind of similar positions were going to be on the roster for long term. And it just seems like they're going to push that forward. Mihailuk was the one Casey kind of saw emerge his preseason and gave him a chance to try to take some minutes from Langston Galloway in the second unit. I'm not sure if he's done enough to do that, but it's clear that he's above Kyrie Thomas right now. As you know, Bruce Brown started 50-plus mm-hmm. games as a rookie, and he's going to start again this year. So Thomas is kind of just lost in the sauce. He's a second-round guy that guys that around draft time thought could go in the first round. He makes a little bit more than Mihailuk and Brown, about like $1.1 million this year. So it's not a hard contract to move, but it would be harder of the young guys. I just think that there's really no room for Kyrie right now. Mm-hmm. And if they really – want to be a little more, have a little more depth in the front court because they are thin. You want to keep Christian Wood around, whether he plays over down or not. And then if you want to have another veteran presence, you keep Joe Johnson. So I think they do try to find a way to keep both and then trade somebody, whether that be Kyrie, whether that be Langston, whether that be Thon. But again, it takes two to tango. So if they're not able to find a suiting trade partner, I think Joe Johnson's the one to go. I know like I said, you value locker room presence to a point, but I mean, production on the court first and foremost. If you can keep a guy that's going to be a little bit more productive, you keep that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on the Joe Johnson impact of just the veteran impact, I should say, in general. And I do think that it comes down to that wing rotation. You know, with it being, you know, with Kyrie Thomas looking on the outside looking in, I could see a scenario where they ship him off to a team that's looking for just some young guys to try and take some flyers on, and you know, I think there's value in that by the league, but I don't think they have the I don't think they're gonna cut Kyrie Thomas and keep Joe Johnson. I think if they don't trade him, then they're going. And like you mentioned in your articles, you know, Langston Galloway, obviously that $7 million is a lot harder to move, especially at this time when so much money is tied up till December 15th. So teams don't really have that $7 million that's easily tradable. And so I could definitely see Kyrie Thomas being the one to go if there is one to go. And I do like the idea of keeping Wood and Thon just because I felt last year the front line was very thin even with Zaza and Thon. It felt like the Pistons just didn't have it. And you know, adding Markieff, I think really helps that front line, but I would like to keep Wood on the team as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just shown that he can be a solid NBA backup. He's young, and with Andre Drummond likely to be a free agent next summer, you never know. You might find a diamond in the rough where you keep Wood around and he develops into something more. I just think his upside is he's shown that there's something there that you shouldn't just let him go. And I don't think they'll do that. I think they'll find a way to keep him on the roster.
I think so too. Now, before we get off of the Pistons, I want to talk about their wing rotation, because that I think is the biggest thing. Obviously, last year the perimeter is where Detroit struggled the most. They really didn't have, outside of Blake Griffin, they didn't really have a lot of shot creating. Luke Kennard stepped up and Reggie Jackson, but it was clear that those wing positions and just in terms of shot creating was lacking. And so, you know, they got a guy like Tony Snell, who's not exactly a shot creator, but he is someone who can shoot the ball. Derrick Rose is an absolute upgrade over Ish Smith, as much as I love Ish Smith. But so I think there's going to be a very noticeable improvement. I know that this isn't the greatest perimeter rotation in the NBA. It's far from it. But I really do think that there's going to be a big and very noticeable difference in the production we get from the perimeter this year. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously Derrick Rose is a big name. He's a name people respect, and as they should. He's a former MVP, and he resurrected his career last year. Mm-hmm. I'm a little more tamed on my Derrick Rose, what he'll bring to the table. I think there will be nights where he's really, really, really good. And then I think there's some nights where he's going to be . I think that's just kind of where the state where he's at in his career. Some of those lengthier teams, like in Orlando, a Philadelphia, he might have a little more. He might struggle a little bit more finishing in the hoop, and he plays a little wild. He likes to attack, and those longer teams, from what I've seen with him in Detroit, he struggles with a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think, like you said, he is an upgrade over Ish. That's no question. I think Luke Kennard's going to take a massive step. I mean, you saw in the playoffs last year, he was the team's best player in the playoffs until Blake got back. Really, after like his kind of sideline blow up in Sacramento in January, he was a different player around the trade deadline. He started to be a little bit more assertive, and I think that's one thing I've taken away from the preseason is his shot selection. He's taking the shots that Dwayne Casey wants him to take. He's not really hesitating. It looks like that message has gotten through to him and he's accepted it. And he's such a good shooter that I think there's a chance, I think there's a chance that he averages somewhere between 12 and 14 points a game this year, which would be massive for Detroit. Now, the thing is, Bruce Brown, he's not going to improve his shooting improvement's not necessarily going to show this year. I don't think he might shoot a better percentage. He's not going to take many threes. But it looks like he's found a way to get a shot or create for others by attacking, getting deep in the paint. He might have improved his finishing. I know that was a big emphasis with him. I talked to him about it. There's a story on The Athletic talking about how he kind of last year realized he was jumping too far away from the basket, and that hurt his finishing numbers. He's looked pretty good in the preseason doing it. Does Langston Galloway run away with that other guard spot in the second unit? He's been streaky. Very streaky, and he's hot for 2 weeks, and then he's cold for a month. Can he be a little bit more consistent and then bring what he does defensively, or is Dwayne Casey going to go to somebody like Svi Mihailuk, who behind closed doors can shoot the ball, can put the ball on the floor, but he really hasn't done it in a game setting out in the open? So there's a lot of questions there still, but I think without a doubt, Detroit got better in terms of adding just talent.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's the key here, right? Like, the Vegas over-under is very tricky for the Pistons. They have them at 37.5. They had 41 wins last year, so they're projecting a 4-win decline for the Pistons. And, you know, I understand the case. The Bulls are better. The Hawks are better. The Nets are probably better, maybe depending on, you know, obviously without KD. You know, who knows if they're better or not, but they're around the same team. The Heat are going to be better. So I understand, but I still, even with the concerns about Blake, like that last season was likely going to be Blake's best season. I don't see him topping that. I see him being near that, but I don't see him topping last season in terms of games played and just statistical performance. But I do think the upgrades that the Pistons made over the offseason at least keep us around the same team. So I feel pretty comfortable taking the over, even though there is a lot of reason to predict that there might be a little slide for Detroit.
Yeah, and that's fair. I agree with you. I think Atlanta is better. I think Chicago is better. The Nets, I'm interested to see, because I thought they had great continuity, great chemistry with D'Angelo Russell kind of leading the way. But Kyrie's a head case, man, and that could mess things up. And then you throw in the fact that Jared Allen's better than DeAndre Jordan, and DeAndre Jordan's going to take some of those minutes.
Yeah.
There could be some interesting things that go on in Brooklyn that might not have them as good as people think right away. So I'm interested to see that. But Detroit, like we said, they're a better team. The big thing is, and I've kind of said this in some stories, are they significantly better enough that with Blake likely and more than likely going to miss games due to load management if he's relatively healthy, say he misses 7 to 10 games with load management. Can the Pistons post a 500 record in those games? That's the big question. At minimum, a 500 record at minimum. Are they that much better than a year ago when they struggled in the few games Blake sat out, which is very few? But are they good enough to stay afloat without Blake Griffin? Because if Blake Griffin's healthy, I think this team gets back into the playoffs. If he's not healthy, then there's an issue. If he's healthy, but they're kind of going, like I said, 7 to 10 games with the load management, the big thing is Detroit good enough to stay afloat when in games where he's just missing them because they want to make sure if they make the playoffs, he's ready to go?
Right. I think that's an absolutely great point. The Pistons did struggle without Blake Griffin mightily last season. And, you know, you're right. I definitely see him missing 7 to 10 games. I think that is in the books for Blake Griffin. I think it has to be if you're Detroit and you want anything more than to just be roadkill in the playoffs like you were last year. Like, if you want anything more than that, any type of improvement, you have to load manage Blake Griffin. And so 7 to 10 games is a fair amount. Now, I don't know their number offhand last season in the games that he didn't play, because he played, 75 last year, correct?
Yes, and I remember he sat out a game and this is before he got hurt at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. All I remember off the top of my head, because all the games blend together after a while, I know he sat out a game in Philly, and because I remember talking to him after that, and I know he sat out a game in Sacramento. Other than that, I don't remember if he had another load management day. The rest of I think the missed games came from when he got injured toward the end of the year, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I know I remember two kind of load management days, though. I know for sure two load management days.
Yeah, I remember the Philly one because they got absolutely smacked that game. I remember that.
I think Luke had 29 in that game or so. That's all Luke had a really good game, and that was kind of all I remember about that.
Yeah, I don't recall the Kings one, but that sounds right. I do remember more than one game. So,
yeah.
I wouldn't pretend to remember their record offhand, but I do remember all the games that they lost down the stretch when Blake wasn't playing. So yeah, I don't know their record off the top of my head, but if I had to guess, if it was like 6 or 7 games that he missed last year, I would say they went likely, 2-5 in that stretch?
I had to guess, because I know I'm 100% sure it was a Sacramento game, because I think that was the game right – I think he returned to the Clippers, then there was a game in Sacramento, and then I think we flew back to L.A. to play the Lakers, and he sat him – and Dwayne sat him out for the Kings game, and I know they lost that one because that's the one I think where Luke had the blow-up on the sideline. And they lost that one in Sacramento. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, two for sure that I can remember.
Okay, so again, their over under is at 37.5. I have them at the over. I think that they upgraded their roster enough to withstand. Obviously, you know, not any catastrophic injuries, but you know they have enough to withstand what's reasonable expectations are as far as Blake Griffin's performance this season. So I'll take the slight. I'll take the slight over, despite the Western Conference getting, or Eastern Conference getting better. Excuse me. Where do you have the Pistons?
It's tough, man. I think my gut tells me they're over, but that's really just based off because I just saw Blake Griffin play 75 games, and if he can do that again, they're in good shape. I just don't know if they can. If he can, Reggie Jackson's play this preseason has been concerning.
Yes.
What do they do with that? Like, do they trade him at some point to try to open up a starting backcourt of Bruce Brown and Luke Kennard and have Luke kind of take over Reggie's role? I'm going to say over, but I'm not sold. It's by much more. I'm not sold. If I was a bettor, I'd stay away from Detroit.
Absolutely. I think that bettor should take this advice closely, considering, you know, one that covers the Pistons and one that watches the Pistons every single game. Trust me, this is one you want to stay away from. Let's jump to Indiana. Now, Indiana's interesting because they had what I would consider a very interesting offseason. So obviously, Victor Oladipo's projected. The latest I've heard is that he's likely back sometime around the new year, sometime in January. But they had a monster offseason, adding TJ Warren, Malcolm Brogdon, Jeremy Lamb, and TJ McConnell, while losing Darren Collison, who retired unexpectedly, Tyreek Evans suspension, Bojan Bogdanovic, of course, Thaddeus Young, Wesley Matthews, Corey Joseph, and Kyle O'Quinn. So they lost a lot and they gained a lot, particularly in the wing rotation. So that's where I want to talk about this team, is a lot of wing rotation movement. Is this team better?
Man, I write off Indiana every year. Like, they have to I think they have to show me, and then they show me. So this is the year I'm not going to write them off, and then they're probably going to underperform. But I do think they got better. I like Malcolm Brogdon. I like Jeremy Lamb in his role. I like McConnell. I think they got to kind of figure out the Sabonis-Turner thing, but I like both of them.
Yep.
And I think they'll be able to stay afloat until Oladipo comes back and is at least 80% of what he once was. I think they're a well-rounded team. I think they're deep. I think they're going to play hard. There's already kind of a foundation that Nate McMillan put in where these guys defensively know what to do. They got some guys that are just ball hawks. They got some length. I like the team. It's tough because that's the one thing that's a positive for Detroit is they play the Pacers four times before Oladipo is supposed to come back. So,
oh wow.
If they could go 2-2, 3-1, that's kind of massive in that series. But like I said, I like Indiana. I always write them off. I'm not going to do it this year just because they've earned my respect and what they've done the last few years. I think losing Bogdanovic is huge. I like Bogdanovic a lot. But he was kind of, when Oladipo went down, he was kind of their go-to guy offensively. And that's not who he is. I think they're a little bit more well-rounded. I'm not sure if Brogdon's going to be as good as he was in Milwaukee with more responsibility, but I think he'll be fine. I'm in on Indiana.
Yeah, and that's exactly where my problem with Indiana lies. Now, I shouldn't say my problem, rather my conundrum, because Bojan and Tyreek were two wings who were absolutely fantastic for Indiana for last season. And Malcolm Brogdon was somebody who I thought played exceptional in Milwaukee. I like him a lot in Milwaukee. I do think he loses some of what he had in Milwaukee when he comes over to another team, just because he seems to be a player that benefits just from being Giannis. around around other great players in a great system. But I do think it's not much. I still think he's a guy with a very high floor, you know, and it's just the ceiling is, you know, 10-20% better than that. But so if Malcolm has a little bit of a drop off, you know, or if he has any drop off, it's a little bit. But that's my problem, is I go back and forth between whether Malcolm is better than Bojan and Tyreek together or if he's not. And I tend to think that he is, and that's why I'll tend to say that they're fine. TJ Warren, I think, was I was concerned about him. I think he's kind of an empty buckets guy, but this is his chance to prove me wrong on that. Jeremy Lamb, I do think, is a good player, and I do like TJ McConnell as a guard. I think he's an upgrade over Corey Joseph. Maybe a minor upgrade, but those are kind of, they kind of almost wash each other. It's really interesting because to me, when I look at these rotations, it's almost like, despite them being totally different wing rotations, they almost wash each other. But I if I had to pick, I'd say they slightly upgraded, which is why I liked their summer, and I think that this is a team that's going to be fine until Victor Oladipo comes back.
No, I'm with you. I think you made great points. Like, I'm a Bogdanovich fan. I like his game, but I've never been a Tyreke Evans guy by any means. But I mean, he was good for Indiana. But I do think that Lamb, Brogdon, and if TJ Warren is legit and he's not an empty buckets guy like you said, I do think those three kind of make up and probably exceed what you get from Bogdanovich and Tyreke Evans. But again, like you said, I want to see if TJ Warren can put up solid numbers. He doesn't have to put up 19 a night like he did in Phoenix. But he has to be efficient, maybe 13, 14, 15 points a game. If he's that guy, Indiana's a very, very dangerous team.
Exactly, especially when Oladipo comes back. Adding Oladipo to that wing rotation will be very good. And if Turner and Sabonis can also find a better fitting between the two, I think they play fine together. I don't think it's you know, they're unplayable together. They're certainly not that in my eyes, but I do think that they each kind of take a little bit away from each other when they play together. But I think if they can even find a way to improve that chemistry of that front line too, with Oladipo coming back, then I could see Indiana being an even better team than they were last season.
Yeah, no, I could see it too. And the fact that I've been writing them off and they've been this good, maybe if I jump on the bandwagon, they'll be great. So I'm gonna stay on that one.
Maybe the James Edwards approval is all they need. So their over-under is at 46.5, which is super high. I personally, it's tough because that has them currently, for frame of reference, that has them as essentially the fifth in the Eastern Conference. And while the fifth seed makes sense, for some reason 46.5 seems a little bit high to me when your best player is out until January. So I'll take a slight under, but I do think that they'll be a better team than they were last season.
I'm with you. I think they're somewhere between 43 and 45 wins. Mm-hmm. I think that it's weird because I do think they're better, but I don't know if I can see them getting over. What did you say, 46 or 47 wins?
46.5 is the line.
I don't know if I can see them getting close to 50 wins. Yeah.
Without Oladipo.
Without Oladipo, and he's not even going to be 100% in January.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under, but I wouldn't be surprised if they exceed it. Yeah, I'm going to go. I think they get somewhere between 44 and 46.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I'm right there. I think they're right on that line. Last season, they won 48 for a frame of reference. Let's jump to the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, the Milwaukee Bucks, I mean, they absolutely shocked me. Last season, I remember in the playoffs when they got matched up with Toronto, I was thinking, man, with Kawhi hurt, there is no way that Milwaukee doesn't roll them in 4 or 5. And then, you know, sure enough, they have a great game one, and then all of a sudden it just completely flipped, and Kawhi just took it to the absolute next level. They have a very interesting team, and I think that they retained a lot of what they lost. To me, the absolute key is with this team, Malcolm Brogdon obviously was their big loss, but can George Hill, who played phenomenal in the playoffs, and Pat Connaughton, who had good moments in the playoffs and throughout the regular season, can those two give you maybe 80% of what 80-85% of what Brogdon gave you? And then if Giannis obviously takes another step like people think he can, then I don't think the Brogdon loss is really felt too much.
Yeah. See, Milwaukee's in a weird space to me. I think they're by far the best team in this division. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I think they're a better team. Losing Brogdon, I think, hurts. I think he was just perfect for that system. He was perfect playing off Giannis, playing with Giannis. I think that's going to hurt. And then as soon as they sign Eric Bledsoe, he goes down south. Like, he goes – like, his play completely almost does a 180. He was really good up until that. Then they give him that money, and he has not been as good. And I think that could come back to bite them. I think that's what separated them last year is how deep they were. And I think they're still deep. Like, they could run out 10, 11 guys that were really good. I mean, all the way down from Sterling Brown to Ilyasova.
We didn't talk about Mirotić, who also went overseas. So they lost a lot of talent, but it's crazy to think that that a lot of that talent can be a lot of that loss of talent can be absorbed.
Yeah, and it's like they kind of had some guys that overlapped, but it was perfect. Like, Mirotić and Ilyasova kind of do the same thing.
Yeah.
But when you play them together and they're both that efficient, that's freaking super dangerous. Now you just kind of have Ilyasova there, who's a good player, solid NBA player. I think they're going to expect DiVincenzo to step up. Pat Connaughton was really good, like you said. Can he keep that up? I think they're a good team. I think they're the best team in the division. Wouldn't be surprised if they don't make it to the finals, though.
I'm with you. You know, I mean, again, I could see this team being posting an almost identical record to last season. They got, what was it, 58 wins last season? Or no, they did get 60. Yeah, so I would expect them around 57-ish wins this season, somewhere around there, just due to the loss of a couple players. But the Eric Bledsoe thing is absolutely huge. The Mirotić thing I also don't think is talked about enough. But again, all that can totally change if Giannis can even take somehow another step. I mean, almost all of that can be erased, and you know, it's going to be really interesting to watch the Bucks. I'm very curious to see how they fit, how they rebound from last season, and how they move forward. But it's tough, man. I just with Philly's size, with a lot of that, I'm with you. If you had to put a percentage on their chances to make the finals, what would you put it right now?
I like Philly more.
Mm-hmm. 40% chance they make finals?
You said 40?
Yeah, they make the finals.
See, like, I think it's higher, but, like, in my opinion, last year, like, it would have been, if you asked me that at the beginning of last season, I would have said 80%. Like, I thought they were by far the best team. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's, like, 65, 70%. Like, I don't know if my percentages make sense. Like, I think Philly has a higher percent chance to make the finals. But I think Milwaukee, if Philly doesn't, it's Milwaukee.
Absolutely.
But I don't feel as good about this team as I did this time last year. I was high on the Bucks. I liked them. And I hate to wish this upon a guy and or even put this in the atmosphere, but like, Giannis has been healthy, man, and he plays a very, very aggressive style of basketball. And if he goes down for even some time, I don't know how good they are. I mean, I think they're still good, but they're not championship good. Obviously, it's a no-brainer. But,
yeah,
I mean, at a point, guys get hurt. And I feel like Giannis has escaped that. And if it happens, for some reason, like, you could see it being this year when everything's kind of the table set for him and they just kind of got to get ready to eat. I don't know. It could be interesting. Giannis plays aggressive, and for him not to have any major injuries is kind of obscene, or like just crazy. But you think maybe like a sprained ankle or something, and if that happens and he's out for like a couple months or a couple weeks, I would go under on their projection.
Yeah, 57.5 is just right on the money. That's one that if you're a better, I think you stay away from, because – you know, if Giannis is healthy for the regular season, then I think it's a no-brainer they do, you know, 58 wins, just because, especially if Giannis takes the next step. But if he misses a little bit, even just 3 to 5 games, you know, or something along those lines, then Milwaukee can slip. Or if Eric Bledsoe is Eric Bledsoe of the playoffs and not Eric Bledsoe of the regular season. So there's a lot of interesting factors. I still think that they're, you know, arguably, you know, first or second in the Eastern Conference, but I do see that there's some reason for concern here. So I'll go with the slight under. Are you going the over or the under on 57.5?
I'm gonna go under. I think they beat 50, but I don't think it's by much. Like, maybe I'll cap it at like 54, 55.
Yeah, the rest of the league got better too, man. Like, it's gonna be tougher.
It's gonna be tougher.
But all right, James, well, I know you're getting ready to play basketball, so I'm not gonna hold you up anymore. I appreciate you coming on the podcast, man. This was really really a special moment for my podcast, as somebody that liked your writing. I loved your recent piece you had about the teal jerseys. That was an awesome oral history. Go check that out on The Athletic if you have not. James, you got anything you want to promote before we close the show?
Oh, man, I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, if you haven't checked out The Athletic, please do. If you're a diehard sports fan, I couldn't recommend it more. It's less than just one less. I always pitch one less beer a month, one less beer a week, and The Athletic, which is subscription based, is all yours. If you're a diehard sports fan, us writers at The Athletic, we go a little bit deeper with some of the stuff. We have more time to do stories. It's for the sports fan that really wants to know about their team and everything around them. I think the teal jersey, the oral history of how the Pistons got teal jerseys and that logo and their mascot, I think that's a great place to start if you're a wacky sports fan. I think that's a good starting point.
Yes, it was an excellent read. I learned a lot about the teal jersey in that time. Like, it really clicked in my mind. Like, oh my God, it was only 4 seasons. Like,
yeah,
it's really crazy. And, you know, to see Joe Dumars and Grant Hill talk about it, you know, and you know, kind of see where Joe Dumars feels about it, you know, how he kind of represented the old school Detroit mentality, and then there were some players that represented the new school and wanted something fresh, and, you know, moving on from the bad boy era. So it's a fantastic read. Highly recommend it, James. I thank you so much for coming on the podcast, man. And I definitely want to have some more hip hop conversation with you as well. Sounds like there's more to touch on in that area too.
Yeah, man. No, for sure. I appreciate you having me on. This is a lot of fun, and yeah, let's talk rap. I would love to. Seems like for you to be connected with Dead End, that means you know your stuff. So anytime, you got my number, shoot a text, anything, man.
All right, man, I appreciate it, and we'll have you back on the podcast a little later in the season. Check on the Pistons.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.